Welcome back to the Holoscope Podcast. God damn it. Got me. Flip me off right at the last minute.
Hell yeah.
Welcome back to the Holoscope Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Steven.
And Kyle.
And it's Monday Holocold. You know what that means? You've chosen us to hang out with you to get you through the work week. Snowmageddon's on its way in. We're getting mentally prepared for that. If you're in the Midwest or the South or anywhere that is in the United States, you're probably going to get blizzarded.
Annihilation.
Can't wait. I love the winter. That's a lie. But before that, we're going to bring you some weirdness. Kyle's got something together that I don't know what it is.
I don't either.
So get ready.
Yeah.
If you're new here, we like to talk a little bit before the show starts. A lot of people don't like that. That's too bad because it's our show, not theirs. So you can fast forward. True story. You can fast forward to about the 6 minute mark if you don't want to listen to us talk about stuff, social medias and stuff. But if you do want to listen, feel free to hang out. It's cool.
Yeah.
If you're not new here, welcome back. You weirdo. We love you. On that note, check us out at all our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Discord, Reddit. Search up the Holosky Podcast. You'll find us there. Come be part of the community. Join the cult. It's a fun cult. It's not an MK Ultra cult. It's just chill. It's the chill K Ultra cult. It's easy. If you have a paranormal encounter you'd like for us to feature on a future episode of this show or some other show, or whenever we decide to put it out, Kyle's got some information for you.
I do. And I'm doing everything in my power to keep it together right now because it's going to be great. But that's foreshadowing. Holoskypodcast@gmail.com. Write your story out. Type it out there as much detail as you can because that's important. Then you're going to hit the send button. It's going to go whoosh. That means we get it. It goes into the catacombs, which is patent pending. And then eventually it gets pulled out and turned into an episode, as you guys have experienced by the end of the last year and the beginning of this year. Also, friendly message, Taylor from Sephora, suck it. That was a foreshadowing.
That goes to Taylor from Sephora too.
Yeah. That's how we roll at the Holo Camp.
I don't even know why I'm mad at them, but...
Yeah, I mean, if you have a problem with one of us, you have a problem with all of us. So just suck it.
I trust Kyle's judgment as I trust my own. Probably better than I trust my own.
Yeah, she was ultra rude to my wife. So I'm publicly shaming you. Shame on you. Do better.
Dork. Now you're famous, Taylor from Sephora.
That sucks.
For all the wrong reasons.
You're being rude lady.
Rude ass.
Don't like rude people.
Do fucking better.
Yeah. Sending smoke at the start of the year.
The world's shitty enough as it is. We don't need your fucking attitude. Okay?
I love the hostility and he has no idea what happened.
No, it don't matter. She needs to chill the fuck out. Chill the fuck out.
Jeez.
Just ruined my goddamn day, and I wasn't even there. If you'd like to support this little endeavor of just anger, there's plenty of ways you can do it. Over at the Patreon, we got all kinds of new stuff going on over there. You can go check it out, look through the tiers. You know the drill. It's fine. We have holoskypodcast.com. We got some merch over at the merch store. There's some leftover stuff over there you can go check. Me and Kyle are just discussing some new designs. Actually, I know we say that every time, but... eventually, it's going to be there, and you guys are going to be shocked. The best thing you can do is just share the show word of mouth. Keep sharing it every time we drop it. Share it on all the social medias. Share it to all your weird friends. That's the 2026 goal, is to grow the Holo Cult as much as possible.
Yes. Just
keep it going. Keep it going. Keep it growing. Full steam.
Also, real quick. If anybody has worked in the department of getting custom hoodies made, throw us some good brands of hoodies to use. Because we don't want to spend a bunch of money and then have shitty hoodies.
Yeah.
Nobody likes a uncomfy hoodie.
Nobody wants that.
Yeah. It's like some of them that we've had feel like a cardboard box. So think about that.
Yeah.
If you have knowledge, please share.
Yeah, we could use it.
Yeah,
obviously. And you can also go to wherever you listen to
podcasts.
Yeah. And leave us a 5-star rating and review. You can also do that on social media. And with that being said, this week's 5-star rating and review comes to us from our friend Wiseblood on Facebook. Doesn't give us 5 stars because you can on Facebook, but you can give us 100%. And that's what he did. Wiseblood said, "My favorite podcast, hands down. Steve and Kyle welcome you in like an old friend. Unless you're Taylor from Sephora, then you can fucking suck it."
Dude, for a second there, I was stoked. I thought he knew, and he wrote it in there.
No, that was just me ad-libbing off the cuff.
That was good. That was good.
Wiseblood isn't angry at Taylor from
Sephora. Oh, he is now.
Well, yeah. Yeah. He goes back to saying, "Well-researched and lovingly presented, each week's episode is a joy to look forward to. These guys deserve all the success in the world. Stay safe, stay weird, and much love from Ireland. Your friend, Wiseblood."
Much love.
Hell yeah, Wiseblood. Shout out to Ireland and all the Irish people over there.
Yeah.
Especially Wiseblood.
You guys are cool.
Thanks for sending the love.
Yeah.
And I know you didn't say that about Taylor from Sephora. I made that part up.
That's okay, though. I like when you make stuff up. It's funny.
That's on me.
It's funny.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm a funny guy.
I mean, yeah, I think so.
About 3% of the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now that everybody's pissed off that we've taken 7 minutes to get into the show. Oh, hold on. Hold on. Ooh, I'll miss my cue there.
Advert. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll miss my cue.
Yeah.
Another thing you can do to support the show is show some love to our wonderful sponsors, which you're going to hear from right about now. Hey, Hollow Cult. We're right into the new year, and if you're like me, you're in the mindset of wanting to get healthier. But I feel like I'm just guessing as to which habits actually matter for me specifically. I don't know which supplements to buy, which vitamins to take, or which workout trends I should be following. It's easy to get overwhelmed at the thought of it all. But this is where True Diagnostic comes in. True Diagnostic helps you find the exact supplements and lifestyle changes that can make a difference for you, and which ones you might be wasting your money, time, and energy on. If you're spending money on supplements, workouts, and wellness trends, it's worth knowing what is actually going to move the needle for you. With True Diagnostic, you can choose your test. With True Age, it measures your biological age versus your chronological age and your current pace of aging. It also gives you your top 3 aging actions that you can take to slow or reverse aging. With True Health, it tests 105 plus biomarkers, including vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and fatty acids to understand your body system's health right now. It focuses on energy, metabolism, inflammation, and nutrient status today and gives you your top 3 health actions to work on for the next 90 days. Or for your best value, you can get the combo kit, which combines the True Age and True Health tests in one package. It shows you how fast you're aging and how healthy you are right now and gives you both 3 aging actions and 3 health actions to work on each quarter. The process and experience is simple. Order online and the kit ships right to your door. It's quick, simple finger prick at home, then drop it in the prepaid return package. Your only job, follow the 3 most important actions you can take for 90 days, then retest to see your progress. True Diagnostic is trusted by top longevity clinics and health professionals, not just consumers at home. Right now, our listeners can get 20% off at truediagnostic.com using code HOLOSKY at checkout. That's truediagnostic.com. And use code HOLOSKY for 20% off today. Choose True Age, True Health, or the Combo Kit as a one-time purchase or a subscription. Hey, Holocult. Did you know that there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your front door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with promo code HOLO1. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high.
Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. They have Sleepy Time Advanced gummies for a mind-soothing calm each night. They also have Morning Delta 9 gummies for an energizing, focused mental boost to start your day. Mind Magic gummies for focused, deep work and enhanced creativity. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a large selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get in the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your front door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered directly to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned before, Hollow Sky listeners gets 20% off their first order with code HOLO1. So head to mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code HOLO1 when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Be sure to try it today at mood.com. Okay, now everybody's mad that it's been 7 minutes. Kyle's going to dive into this.
I am. It's going to be good. It is. I think it's a little chaotic, but that's always part of the course.
Did you see that intro?
Yeah, it was good. It was good. And not to mention, like you said, this recording weekend royally got screwed because snow's coming. I'm going to have to go to work, so on and so forth. So a little bit of a disaster. Anyways. Last episode, we went over some of the Charles Manson debacle and most of his early history and the connection to the possible CIA and MK Ultra. In this episode, we're going to spin a little bit different direction. We're going to go through some of the murders and see what it may or may not connect to. I found it pretty interesting when I kind of did some stumbling around. And it just seemed interesting. So we're going to play that angle. We're going to start with 34-year-old Gary Allen Hinman. Gary was a music teacher at UCLA. He had previously befriended the family and allowed some of them to stay at his home. According to Atkins, she said Manson believed that Hinman was rich and sent some of the family over there to convince him to join the family and surrender all of his assets to the family.
Oh.
Which seems like a relatively shitty tactic, if I may put my two cents in.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like that's a very good plan.
Yeah, and no shade. But I mean, homie's a music teacher.
That and
I don't really anticipate music teachers to be rich.
No.
And there's no shade. I've worked many, I was a tree trimmer. I'm not rich. So
same, but if Manson, if Manson's the proposed cult leader brains behind the outfit, don't you think he would want to go over there and convince dude to join the cult instead of his little weirdo hippie cronies?
Yeah, we kind of get to that a little bit.
Perfect.
The three family members that went over to Hinman's house were Atkins, Brunner, and Basoli. That's what I'm going to call him.
Nailed it.
They held Hinman hostage for 2 days, and they were basically torturing him. Where the fuck's your money? Because we're taking your money.
Oh, that's how they convinced him to join the cult.
Yeah.
I told you we were a cool cult. There's a lot of other cults out there that don't do things amicably.
Yeah. So Manson does end up showing up with a sword.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Slashes the guy's face and ear, only to then leave. And Baselli stabs him into death, allegedly on Manson's order. Now, before leaving the residence, they drew a panther paw and wrote political piggy on the wall in an attempt to point the fingers at the Black Panthers. So you have that debacle. And then, do you have any questions, Steve?
A few that you aren't going to have answers to.
Okay, let's hear them, because I might have answers.
What kind of sword?
Oh, I don't know.
And which this leads into that. Where did he get the sword?
That's a good question.
Can the sword kill extraterrestrials?
Most, if it's a samurai sword, then yes.
Like Edmund's had at Stardust.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's a samurai sword, then yes.
What if it's the same sword?
Oh, that'd be terrifying.
Like, yeah, it's like a Highlander kind of thing.
Yeah, that'd be terrifying.
There can be only one.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, on August 8th, 1969, Watson took Atkins, Krenwinkel, and Linda Caspian. They end up going to 150 CeeLo Drive. Watson said Manson instructed him to go to the home and destroy everyone in there and do it as gruesome as you possibly can.
Which sucks. Yes. RIP.
Yeah.
What a horrible cult leader.
Yeah.
You're not going to build up a cult if you just murder everybody you try to get into your cult.
Right. So
what a dork.
Yeah. Watson and three women got there a little past midnight, and Watson climbed a telephone pole, which this is interesting. He climbed the telephone pole and cuts the telephone line. They also apparently assumed that the gate was electrified and decided to jump the fence elsewhere, which is another interesting note, in my opinion. Who the fuck assumes that the gate is that thing that rich people do over there is electrify their front gates and not the whole fence?
As a not rich person, I don't know.
Yeah. It's a weird thing to assume.
Could he have cut the phone line at the house?
Oh, one would think so. Yes.
I don't care what my cult leader says. I am not climbing a telephone pole.
Yeah. And you know, he would have had to like shimmy up it.
Yeah. That's a lot of extra work when you can just cut it at the house.
Dude probably had a fuckload of splinters.
And on a fuckload of LSD.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure. That probably made it easier.
I don't think rich people have electric fence gates.
No, I'd imagine that's illegal.
Or something.
Yeah.
That's for like farm animals.
Yeah.
What a weird take.
If you're rich and you have an electric front gate, let us know.
If you have people on LSD climbing your telephone poles,
also let us know.
Yeah. Let the authorities know.
Yeah, you should probably let them know first. Then let us know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as they made their way towards the home, they are creeping through the fucking yard, and all of a sudden a pair of headlights hit them. Watson's like, yo, get the fuck down. The girl's hiding in the bush. Watson says, fuck it. He jumps out and he pulls his pistol out. He's got a .22 pistol. He aims it at the driver, who's this young dude. I'm assuming his last name's Parent. Watson, you know, the dude's like holding his hands up. He's pleading with him. Watson cuts him across the hand, which actually goes deep enough to sever tendons and stuff. And then shot him four times in the chest.
Jesus.
So there's no mercy. And as they got to the home, they cut one of the screens out, and Watson ends up going through a window. Frykowski was sleeping on the couch, and apparently Watson just fucking kicks him in the head, which obviously wakes Frykowski and then confuses him. And so he starts questioning Watson. He's like, what the fuck are you doing here? Who are you?
Head.
Yeah. What's going on? Watson said, and I quote, I'm the devil and I'm here to do the devil's work.
That's the line,
which is kind of part of what is going to tie in later. It's a very interesting thing to say.
When he cut the kid that was driving the car before he shot him, was it with the sword?
No, I think he had a knife in this case. In the next series of murders, I think he uses a silver-plated bayonet or something crazy like that.
Of course.
Yeah, right?
Of course. Right. I was curious. I was curious if there was a sword motif going on. But, yeah, back to getting kicked in the head.
Yeah, so he says, you know, I'm here, or I'm the devil, and I'm here to do the devil's work. Which, like I said, very weird thing to say considering the environment Manson created for all of them. They studied a bunch of different things, and Manson created this narrative. But even the religious shit that he was studying, it was said that, or it was believed that the devil and Jesus would come together and judge humanity. So I find it odd that Watson would use a phrasing like that from the stories that we know about Manson. You know, I'm obviously assuming there were underlining things that were going on, because normal people just don't say that type of shit.
It's very cinematic. It's very, like,
yes,
dramatic. And it makes me wonder if, like, maybe in his head, or could even be been Charles pushing the narrative, maybe if he said, like, weird shit like that and there were survivors, that would be something that they would remember.
True. And
could spin specific narratives if there were survivors.
Well, there's not going to be survivors the way they, because Watson ends up putting Frykowski down by hitting him in the head with a gun. He stabs him and also shoots him twice, but he fucking stabs the guy 51 times.
That's a little much.
It's excessive.
That's a little overkill.
Yeah. And then there's a woman inside, last name Folgers, and she's the heir to the coffee company. She escapes the girls that are fucking with her, but she ends up getting run down by Krenwinkle. And then Watson catches up and helps her kill Folgers, stabbing her 28 times.
What the fuck?
So they're crazy knife happy. Tate, who was also inside the house, she was pregnant. She was like 8.5 months pregnant. She is pleading with him, just please let me give birth. I'm offering myself as a hostage. Just please let me give birth. Atkins and Watkins, or Watson, stab her 16 times. They also apparently took her and hung her. And another interesting thing here, which may have resulted to the graffiti that ends up being left in blood and the hanging, Manson had told the crew to leave a sign, something witchy, quote unquote.
Something witchy.
Something witchy. And Atkins wrote pig in blood on the front door, in Tate's blood also. So that could be another, I guess, witchy thing that took place. But it's another weird phrasing to use this witchy,
yeah, like,
description. It's very bizarre.
It's almost like he's trying to, like, spin a bunch of different threads. Like, the first one, he wanted it to be thought that the Black Panthers were responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Now this one, it's almost like he wants occult ties and stuff. It's strange.
It is strange. Now we move to the LaBlanca murder, or LaBianca murders. Apparently Manson was displeased with the previous night's events. And he's like, all right, I'm coming with you guys tonight, where I'm going to show you how it's done. They go to 3301 Waverly Drive in Los Feliz in Los Angeles. This house was next door to a house that they had partied at the previous year. The house belonged to supermarket executive Lino LaBianca, and his 43-year-old wife, Rosemary. Manson and Watson break in and tie up Leno at gunpoint. And I don't know. So help me. I am not smart. Same. I do know how to read, but I'm also not smart. They said they tied his hands up with a leather thong. Now, I only know thong underwear and thong sandals. I don't know if there's any other reference to thong out there. If there is, let me know.
I just Googled it. It's not what you think it was. Apparently, it is a type of leather cordage, sort of like, not necessarily twine, but it is like thin strips of leather used as cordage.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping for the underwear, but whatever. It is, you know, it is what it is. Because in my head, that's what it was. They somehow
makes it real
tied his hands up in a leather thong.
Makes it real strange.
Yeah. So this is, you know, it's, I'm not laughing at what happened because what happens is fucking wretched. But Rosemary is brought in, and so her and Leno are in the living room at this point. Their hands are tied. They put pillowcases over their heads and use cords from lamps and tie the pillowcases to their heads. Krenwinkel and Van Houten then come into the house as well at this point. So there's four people, four bad guys in the house. They then separate the couple, and Watson ends up stabbing Leno in the neck. He hears a scuffle coming from the bedroom where Rosemary, being a bad bitch, is fending off the attackers with the lamp that's tied around her neck.
The lamp was still connected to the
cord? The lamp was still connected to the cord. So she's swinging this motherfucker around trying to hit these girls.
Jesus.
But unfortunately, Watson, being bigger and stronger, comes in with the bayonet, sticks her too. The same one that he stabbed Leno with.
God.
Watson goes back into the living room and attacks Leno more, stabbing him 12 times. Then he carves war into Leno's abdomen, which is another weird fucking thing to do. Rosemary gets stabbed 41 times. The women attackers in this case write "Rise, Death to Pigs," and "Helter Skelter" in blood within the house. Now in Leno, I can't remember exactly where they did it on him. But they end up stabbing a pearl-handled carving fork, a two-pronged carving fork in him, and a steak knife, it feels symbolic to me.
Yeah, and they use the term pig and
yeah, it's weird. Like it's weird. And those are the I guess you would say the more famous murders from the Mansons, the ones that got publicized. But there was a she murder, S-H-E-A, Shia, however you say it. There was that murder. And then the Manson family is suspected of over 35 murders. Not to mention Tate's younger sister, Deborah Tate, told investigators, "You're just scraping the surface when it comes to the number of Manson's victims."
That's terrifying.
And there's a massive list here. Well, not a massive list. There's a few thought, they weren't able to tie him to it. But there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 other murders that they're pretty fucking sure Manson had a hand in. But the fact that two people, Manson's cellmate, suggested that Manson told him he committed at least 35 murders, and then Tate's younger sister said, "You're just scratching the surface of what they were actually capable of."
Yeah.
Or what they actually did.
That's, man, now I'm going on Google spree.
And so that kind of funnels down into this thought process that I had, that I was able to find a little bit of information with. What if throughout this endeavor, MK Ultra was the surface of some of this operation? What if there were occult happenings behind these murders? Because the official story of the Manson murders treats them as this senseless, like, explosion of madness, this drug-fueled, incoherent, and driven by this delusional cult leader who's detached from reality. And when the murders are viewed through, you know, a combined lens of a historical, psychological, and occult, the narrative seems to kind of shift around. And it would, you know, kind of beg the question, or kind of oppose the question about Manson being insane.
That's kind of where my brain was running here, because it feels like the victims are very specific targeted victims. Like the music teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Charles thought that he was rich and influential, right? He wanted to get his money, I'm assuming, to help further fund whatever other nefarious stuff he was going to do. And then he had I'm wondering if the heir to the Folgers throne was a specific target, or if she was just there at that murder, because
I wondered that myself, and I really wasn't able to find a whole lot. I'm sure there's information out there. I just didn't have a whole lot of time, because, like I said, I got to work this weekend, blah, blah, blah.
Because that's also like a sort of influential person.
Of course.
It's easily a wealthy person. And then you had Sharon Tate, who was an actress. Sebring, who was tied to celebrities and stuff. So it feels like these were very specifically targeted,
mm-hmm.
but the way they were executed was like not very well planned, you know?
No. And like with Sebring and Tate and them, all of them were brutally murdered, and blood was used to write words on walls. It sounds very occultish to me, not to mention Manson had ties to Hollywood, and there's always been an underlying occult narrative in Hollywood. And then you have the Leno and Rosemary, you know, where Manson is present during all of this. Even though others carried out the killings, again, blood is used for writing and marking the scene. And writing war is a relatively interesting word to put too, because I'm not saying this is correct, but it initially makes me think of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. But the murders, from a conventional criminal standpoint, especially the LaBianca murders and the Sharon Tate and Sebring and Stephen Parent, all of them, there wasn't any known financial motive. There was no attempt to conceal identities during this. There was excessive violence that was beyond necessary in this situation, and symbolic messages left behind. the characteristics almost distinguish that the murders or the murders from a instrumental crime. They point instead towards, you know, quote unquote performance and transformation core features of ritual violence. And then there's a documentation that ritualized killings differ fundamentally from pragmatic violence. Its purpose is not efficiency, but meaning. Ritual violence is typically marked by symbolic victim selection, excessive or ceremonial violence or force, use of blood as a marker or seal, public or semi-public messaging, a belief that the act transforms participants. These features appear in ancient sacrifice, revolutionary terror, extremist initiations. They also appear unmistakably at the Manson crime scenes. The question isn't whether Manson explicitly identified these acts as ritual. The question is whether the structure of the acts conforms to ritual logic. Because one of my questions that I had during this time in reference to, because we all know that there's the possibility of the MK Ultra connection with the LSD situations. And something I did spend a little, so I'm probably going to get a little bit ahead and I might stumble back across this in a minute. So forgive me. But there was a series of questions that I had in my mind as I'm reading through this, because I was looking at it overall from an occult aspect. So I had the idea that what if, because we have found documentation where the CIA has monitored people who've had, for lack of better words, occultic abilities, right? Because I remember you and me talking about some guy they were watching that, I cannot remember if it was like a healing aspect or if he had like these weird magnetic vibrations that were coming on. It was something crazy like that. Which then led me to the thought process and remembering the episodes that we did on the Collins Elite. And that was a huge section where they believed in the demonic forces, so on and so forth. But one of the main markers when it came to the injection of UFOs into that story was that the CIA watched people that were using black magic to essentially summon demonic forces / UFOs. And so I did some research, and Collins Elite actually takes place before the Manson murders. So then my logic turns down this avenue of, okay, so even if the CIA doesn't necessarily believe in the results of occult magic, which I think they do, but even if they didn't, who's to say that Manson is not, he's under the experimentation of MK Ultra. Why not sprinkle these other little aspects and experiments into this situation and see what we can come up with?
Yeah, I mean, the project is already in, like, going on at this point. Who's to say they weren't, you know, dabbling to see what's happening, man? Especially, like, it's so like the most widely accepted narrative was that Manson was trying to start a race war, right?
Help yes.
Start a race war, which is why he tried to pin it on, like, make it seem like the Black Panthers did the first murders and shit. That feels like a very CIA psyops thing to do.
100%.
You know, try to pin it on an opposing group, essentially. Something that could essentially be a threat to the government, to the CIA. I feel like they put a lot more faith in Manson than they should have, because
yeah,
these things did. I don't think they worked out the way that they initially thought that they were going to.
Well, and there's that angle on top of. So as I was doing some digging around, if you take the occult And this plays right into exactly what the CIA was trying to do in this MK Ultra, create assassins and so on and so forth. If you use occult magic, if you will, not as belief, an actual ritual, but what if you used their teachings as more of a technology, right? And so I'm jumping ahead here, but you will understand that it creates a order of operations, if you will, because one thing that happens in occult situations and stuff like that is the creation of altars, the disassociation of things. And if it, you know, so what I'm saying is that the CIA may or may not have believed in occult magic, so to speak, but they believe in the order of operations that the occult uses to break people and essentially create assassins in their own right, you know, because, you know, in ritual systems across history, blood serves as more than evidence of violence. It functions as a binding agent, a liminal substance between life and death, a seal of transition, a marker of irreversible commitment. Writing in blood transforms a space from neutral territory into consecrated ground. It announces that something has occurred that cannot be undone. The use of blood at both crime scenes was deliberate. It was not necessary for intimidation or escape. It served as a symbolic function, one that appears in occult traditions, political terror campaigns, and initiation rites. Ritual violence often selects victims not for personal grievance, but for what they represent. In the Manson murders, the victims symbolize Hollywood and cultural authority, wealth and privilege, the perceived corruption of the system. This aligns with sacrificial logic, where destruction of a symbol is meant to signal the inversion of an order. The act is less about the individual and more about the message sent through their death. This also explains why the randomness of the victims is misleading. From a ritual perspective, they were not random at all. You know, another thing, Manson did not personally carry out the Tate murders, but he was present during the LaBianca killings. This progression mirrors hierarchical initiation structures. First, the leader commands, then the initiates act, finally the leader demonstrates. This pattern appears in cults, extremist cells, and occult orders alike. Authority is not merely asserted, it is sealed through participation at a decisive moment. By joining the second act, Manson crossed the same threshold he demanded of his followers. In ritual terms, this consummates leadership. Manson's worldview was apocalyptic. Helter Skelter was not merely a delusion. It functioned as a myth of end times or transformation. Apocalyptic events are powerful because they suspend ordinary morality. They justify extraordinary violence. They also create urgency and inevitability. Violence becomes not only permissible, but required. This framework appears repeated in history, from cults to revolutionary movements. The content changes, but the structure remains. Manson's ideas did not emerge within a vacuum, so to speak. One of the groups that we brought up in the first episode was the Process Church of the Final Judgment. That's the one where I was saying, you know, he got this belief system of the devil and Jesus coming together to judge the world. Whether or not Manson formally joined or studied the Process Church, the conceptual overlap is there because there's the moral inversion, reconciliation of opposites, violence framed as cosmic necessity. This worldview collapses ethical boundaries. If good and evil ultimately merge, then conventional morality loses all of its authority. For someone already immersed in identity, dissolution, and authority replacement, such ideas would not be foreign. They would be reinforcing to how these people were kind of being brought up. Manson didn't necessarily read grimoires or practice ceremonial magic to absorb these occult mechanics. It's, you know, a possibility is that institutional abuse and dominance hierarchies aided in this. Scientology concepts of ego dissolution, LSD-induced altered states, apocalyptic religious narratives, manipulative self-help, and persuasion literature. Not to mention, I'm also going to throw in the fact that maybe there's a little bit of a push from the powers that be as well. Occult traditions are not necessarily defined by belief in magic. They're defined by techniques of transformation. Manson absorbs these techniques, and some people even suggest that he was a theologian, but he was more of or an operator, which he's not exactly that. I'm with you, Steve. I don't think he was this like hyper intelligent person that some people kind of put him out to be.
I don't think so either. I think he was manipulated by the powers that be. And I think it was dumb luck, essentially, that he stumbled across this ragtag band of people that were looking for somebody to take them under their wing. And I feel like if there was a narrative that the powers that be were trying to spin, the variable that they did not account for was Manson's followers. I feel like Manson was probably a Manchurian candidate. They wanted to put him out there as like a lone wolf. They were already inside, you know. If the MK Ultra stuff is true, they were already in his head. I feel like it should have been a lone wolf Manchurian candidate to get whatever it was they wanted to get rolling. But I think Manson just had just enough flair, just enough ego, just enough charisma to get into these young hippies' heads and make them think that he was a savior. And I think everything started to spiral out of control post that, because essentially the CIA, the powers that be, they can only control Manson. They're at this point, they're not controlling the rest of his little flock, you know?
Right.
And I think that's where things started to spiral out of control big time. And that's where I feel like the narrative starts switching up, and, you know, they go from pushing one, you know, pushing the race war to pushing the occult kind of narrative. And I think it just kind of spirals from there.
There was probably a little bit of perversion in there because, you know, Manson got these, we'll just say, teachings from somewhere with manipulation of LSD and so on and so forth. And what probably took place is kind of like you're saying, but Manson's like, okay, well, I'm going to implement these tactics on my people. And then I'm sure the CIA saw that and was like, you know what? Let's see where this goes. Let's see what happens. Let's just let Manson do his thing.
Yeah. See what kind of carnage can happen.
Yeah.
It's also, it is weird that, like, the line, I'm the devil and I'm here to do the devil's work. I know Manson didn't say that, but wasn't it on like multiple occasions, Manson kind of referred to himself as Jesus.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm pretty sure that in a couple of interviews, like, there's a quote, I may have implied on several different occasions to several different people that I may have been Jesus Christ, but I haven't decided what I am or who I am. So the juxtaposition of that, but I guess it also kind of falls into line with whatever that belief system you were just talking about. I can't remember the name of it.
No, me either.
With, you know,
I don't, yeah,
God and Satan, or Jesus and Satan being like coming together or whatever.
Yeah. And it's weird too, because there are records that confirm the interest in hypnosis, psychedelics, amnesia, personality fragmentation. And this is all from MK Ultra, obedience under altered states, which these goals overlap precisely with what ritual systems have long achieved through symbolic and traumatic means. the intelligence agencies didn't necessarily need to adopt occult belief systems to recognize their effectiveness. They just needed to use it in their way, which is essentially a ritual without robes. And then you have, you know, Jolly West, who is a prominent figure in the MK Ultra. He researched LSD and hypnosis, believed psychosis could be induced and reversed, predicted the emergence of the LSD cults, referred to the Haight-Ashbury Clinic as a laboratory. West didn't need to speak in occult terms, but what he described, identity dissolution, trance states, induced belief, all of that maps cleanly onto ritual frameworks. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm just digging around here. And the
murders themselves, they could be in reference to a final initiation, irreversible binding, this public manifestation of private conditionings. They answered a question MK Ultra sought to understand: can individuals be pushed beyond moral inhibition and still function afterward?
Man, it's got my brain turning now because it makes me wonder if it's not part of something bigger. You know, like maybe, I know it's relatively decades earlier, but could this have been a trial, a precursor to the satanic panic? You know, that's why they're pushing the occult symbology and stuff like that. You know, if you can't get the race war to pop off, let's try a different angle here. Let's have some possessed people. Let the devil make them do it.
And if you think about it from that angle, I mean, it could be multiple experiments going on at one time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you could be using the idea of Satan as like a smear campaign, or like in COINTELPRO and all that stuff, where you're trying to break up the movements that are happening across the United States because they deem them a threat. But at the same time, what if they knew, or they at least believed in the possibility that maybe something could come from this? So why not use this to see if we can get anything to manifest? See if we can provoke the devil. Could you imagine? Because you know what they would think. If they found recorded evidence of someone being able to summon. Because if you're going to summon anything, you're going to, like for war, you're going to want to summon demons to possess people. And if the government found out that was a reality, I think one of the first things they would do is be like, how can we utilize it and turn it to a weapon?
And it's, if you look back in the early 70s, which is like prime, we're going on true crime road here. The early 70s was the prime era for the North American serial killer, right? That's when they were at their peak. For some reason, they really honed in on it. Technology wasn't good. DNA evidence wasn't good. There wasn't CCTV. It was just prime picking for these fucking monsters to go out. And
that is weird. That's a weird point that you bring up. I never really thought about that. And how like we had this era in time that was just kind of like overwhelmed with serial killers.
Yeah. They were at the peak that was their peak. The late 60s to early 80s. That was the chomping ground, because there was no social media. Like I said, there was no CCTV. There was no DNA evidence was barely getting off the ground at that point. Like it was easy to get away with shit at that point.
But do you think, because here's how my mind thinks, because, I mean, staying on my occult side of it, it makes me wonder if there was, because it fucking almost makes you feel like there was some type of demonic infestation that was running rampant through this period in time. But because like my rebuttal to what you're saying about it being easier, at the same time, not all, because there are sloppy ass serial killers, but I get the impression that a true serial killer is overconfident, like very cocky about their abilities and the things that they can do. And I almost feel like because we both know, and I think everybody listening could acknowledge that it's not impossible to get away with heinous crimes in today's world. It's not impossible.
No.
And I feel like for some of these psychopaths, they would look at that as a challenge. And almost not a challenge because of their excellence. Because they're so great.
Yeah. I mean, look, we're going to get way off.
Well, that's fine. I mean, it's kind of like narrowed down now. Because I really wanted to just kind of hammer into the ritual occult based aspect to it.
A point for that. I was going somewhere with that, but like in what you said, is it more difficult? Absolutely. But is it impossible? No. Look at Israel Keyes. I don't know if anybody has ever heard of that. If you want to go down a rabbit hole of a meticulous motherfucker, look at Israel Keyes. He wasn't arrested until 2013. Think about that. That's not that long ago.
No.
Science and investigation technology way up there in 2013 compared to the early 70s. This dude was so meticulous. He would plant kill kits around the United States, leave them buried, guns, all kinds of shit for years. And then he would fly to a city, rent a rental car, go dig up the kill kit, just pick some random fucking house, break in, kill people, bury the kill kit, go home.
It's crazy.
Insanity. There is theories that he altered his fingerprints. There's theory that he had different sort of facial reconstructive surgery to change the way that he looked. There, he would go and rob banks to pay for his plane tickets to get to his murder sites. And this was in 2013. Like that's crazy shit.
That's crazy.
But back to what I was saying, like, yeah, it's possible. And there are people like Keyes that just see it as more of a challenge. The FBI still, this is how it is. The FBI caught him and they still don't know how many people he killed or who the victims are. They just know that he's a serial killer because he told them.
That's crazy.
The victims he claimed and had proof of were people that had either went missing and they just assumed that they were missing, or they were people that had already been written off as accidental deaths.
Which is crazy.
Which is fucking bonkers. But
it's crazy.
Going back to the occult narrative spin, within 5, I don't know, years of the Manson murders, like shit was starting to pop off, because then you had the Son of Sam pop up in the early 70s, where David Berkowitz was going around killing people because there was a demon that had fucking possessed his neighbor's dog that was telling him to do all these things. Like, that's pretty occulty. That's pretty demonish. And then he went on to say that there was an entire network of serial killers that was running in these occult circles, killing that's people.
Nuts.
Yeah. Look up the.
It doesn't like, I know it sounds crazy, but like, you got to warrant the question. Like, what if somebody some way figured out how to fucking, because we always looked at it as like fucking MK Ultra mind control. What if it was something more than that? And it's something I've never considered until you kind of just laid it out in front of me here, because I was very interested in because my, like, one of my serious questions was, what if with these murders, because there was a lot of symbolism in these murders with the, I don't know, I just feel like a lot of it was statements that seemed a little off, even though he's considered a psychopath, so on and so forth. But it just made me wonder if there weren't occult influences being pushed on Manson while under LSD, while with this. But what if, because we always, you know, people talk about it, Steve, like when Joe Rogan trips or when somebody else took a trip, they see the mechanical elves and all this fucking bullshit. What if you are able to reach an altered state of mind where things can fuck with you and you can fuck with them? And
it's,
I mean, I
wonder.
It's a crazy fucking thought. I know, but, and then like you said, I never really thought about how we had a segment of time where it was like a fucking bunch of serial killers just got released onto the fucking world and they just kind of had their way for a while.
And man, I'm trying to find this about Berkowitz. He claimed that he took part in a satanic ritual at one of the Air Force bases.
Get the fuck out of here.
Oh, man.
Because that feeds into exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it.
That's crazy.
Yes.
That's fucking crazy.
And he was making these claims that there was a band, a roving band of serial killers, essentially satanic serial killers, that were going around and murdering people as ritualistic sacrifices.
Bro, what the fuck?
Yeah, man. How do you search on a page? We're dealing here with this. Like Command F.
Maybe.
I don't know. Anyway. Oh, yeah, there we go.
Did you get it?
I think so.
You can go to edit, and then there's a find function.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is Command F.
I got it now.
That's fucking crazy. I never knew that. I never would have thought that you'd have a serial killer being like, yeah, I took part in satanic rituals on an Air Force base.
Yes. Okay. The Satanic Panic in Bismarck and Minot. Berkowitz was said to have visited a satanic cult in Minot at the Air Force Base back in the 1970s.
And that's crazy because that also fits around the time of, I know it was a little bit, well, wait a minute. What years was the Cold War again? Because I believe the Collins Elite was kind of prominent around that time, if I remember correctly. It was around the Cold War era, somewhere around there.
47 to 91.
So, I mean, it's still within the realm of Collins Elite.
Yep.
Because remember, you know, like I said, they went on this whole, and then there's always that like inner debate that we find where they talk about the different factions within these organizations where there's essentially a good team and a bad team. And
yep. And
that's fucking crazy.
Within there, you look into the murder of a woman, 19-year-old woman by the name of Arliss Perry. That you want to talk about a cult ritualistic madness. She was murdered inside the Stanford Memorial Church on October 12th, 1974. The way she was murdered was horrific. Camp security guard claimed to have found her at 5:45 a.m. on the church's east transept near the altar. She was face up with her hands folded across her chest. Trigger warning. An ice pick was sticking out of the back of her head, though the handle was broken off and missing. There were also signs of strangulation. Police reported that she was nude from the waist down. There was an altar candle, a 3-foot altar candle inserted inside of her and another placed between her breasts.
Jesus.
Very ritualistic murder at the same time that these other satanic ritualistic murders happened.
Eventually, it came out in, holy shit, I don't know how long ago it was, 1991. I don't know. It was years later that it came to light that the security guard was actually linked to the murder via DNA. But Berkowitz had mentioned her murder in some of his letters, suggesting that he had heard details of the crime from Charles Manson.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah.
What the fuck? That's fucking crazy.
It's crazy.
Bro, I'm almost like convinced that there was something crazy going on during that time.
He had volunteered information about the case without being prompted in 1979, which means before Berkowitz was caught, he had already had information on the 74 murder of Perry. In one of his writings, it said, Arliss Perry hunted, stalked, and slain, followed to California, Stanford University.
That's fucking wild.
It gets crazy because you go a little bit later and you get into, man, goddamn, what is his name? Let me look. John Wayne Gacy, Chicago serial killer. When was he caught? I think it was in the '80s. There's a podcast called The Clown and the Candyman, and it also goes on to tie multiple serial killers into this web of not necessarily international, but cross-country serial killers that are linked up with one another. They'll kidnap and traffic victims to one another for specific reasons. Whole thing, just fucking crazy, bro.
Get the fuck out of here. See, like, come on. There was not the internet and shit, right? That shit was not around. How the fuck are these assholes getting in contact with each other?
How the fuck did Berkowitz know about Arliss Perry's ritualistic murder?
Yeah.
He didn't have information.
Bro, come on. Like, that's some fucking sussy ass shit.
It's crazy. Oh, dude. Yeah. And Gacy was in the exact same time period, between 72 and 78.
Bro, that's fucking crazy, man.
The other guy, David Coral, who was in on it too, talking about trafficking people back and forth. Like they said there was a band of interstate truck drivers or of coast to coast truck drivers that would pick up victims for.
Yeah, they're probably the fucking government.
For specific serial killers.
And what's that about? What does that fucking mean?
Fucking weird, bro.
How the fuck are you picking up specifics for a motherfucker? Like, I get it if, like, because I know there are killers out there that are like, I want a blonde-haired woman, you know, whatever. But still, the fact that it's still fucking crazy to me that some asshole is going to be on the East Coast and be like, oh, this would be cool for fucking Lenny over in the West Coast. This is exactly what he's looking for. I'm just going to go. I know Lenny. I'm just going to drop it off for him.
It's weird.
So he can do his thing. Like, what would be the motivator for somebody to do that?
You want it to get even more weird? You want to get?
Yeah, I do.
So Gacy was a big into politics, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's a photo of him standing directly next to Rosalynn Carter, Jimmy Carter's wife, mm-hmm. during the campaign in 78. This Gacy still has blood on his hands and nobody knows what he's done at this point. And he's standing right next to Rosalynn Carter. Gacy was the Democratic Party precinct captain and local contractor in Chicago, which at that point, nobody knew that he was a serial killer. If you look at the picture, Gacy's also wearing an S pin on his lapel, indicating that he had been vetted and given security clearance by the Secret Service to get in contact with Rosalind Carter.
That's fucking nuts, dog.
Crazy.
It's fucking nuts. Like, I don't know, man. Other than some fucking crazy ass government intervention, I do not know how all these guys would know about each other when the Secret Service doesn't even fucking know about them.
How are you going to get vetted by the Secret Service and have 33 goddamn bodies under your basement?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I'm kind of fucking mind blown right now.
The White House confirmed that Mrs. Carter later autographed the photo for Gacy with the inscription to John Gacy, best wishes, Rosalind Carter.
I am utterly dumbfounded by all of this.
I wasn't even insinuating that
they use real occult magic. I just kind of figured that they like created hybrid situations where they used occult methods and may have accidentally done something, or maybe we're just kind of tinkering with it a little bit on top of this mind control experimentation. But now it makes me wonder if they weren't exactly going for mind control. They were going for fucking full on possession of these motherfuckers.
And at first, say with Manson, you know, maybe they were dabbling a little bit of MK Ultra. What can we do to kind of tweak his brainwaves to see what they're doing? But with goddamn Gacy, they just let it out. They're like, you know what? We're just going to let him in here. He's good. We checked him out. He's fine. Get out of here. Get the fuck out of here.
That's crazy. I have never considered this in my entire life. And now I'm sitting here dumbfounded as fuck. The fact that dudes are doing satanic rituals at air bases and they have an underground network of serial killers where they deliver victims to each other. It's crazy.
It's crazy. I know you're not a true crime guy, but there's some podcasts like The Clown and the Candyman. It makes you wonder what the fuck was going on in those 30 years from the early 60s to the late 80s or whatever the fuck. Like, if it was ritualistic, Think of the fear that was going on in America when the serial killer was at its crux. There's so much power just behind the fear. There were serial killers. Berkowitz was shutting New York City down, saying, "Hey, somebody comes out. There's going to be another person dying. I can guarantee you that. So everybody needs to stay the fuck inside." And whole swaths of New York would just shut the fuck down.
That's crazy. And I never thought about that either, how there was an era where they ran rampant and now there's not. I'm sure they exist. They're still out there. But not to the level of what it was.
It's almost like they had free reign.
Yeah.
And you look at like...
Which is par of the course for Manson and what took place there. Because I feel like 100% the government knew Manson. They were aiding him in these LSD experiments. And they just let it play out. And sure, they did have a narrative. They wanted to break up the Black Panthers. They wanted to break up the hippie movement. There were underlying narratives that they wanted to stomp out for whatever reasons.
Yep.
But I don't know. With the rest of it, I feel like there was something more. And you might be right where Manson was kind of the tip of the iceberg.
Almost like
and it worked. And they were like, well, let's try this again. Let's see what else we can do.
It definitely makes you wonder, man, because like the way that they missed shit is bonkers. Like with Dahmer was pulled over by the police with his first victim in a trash bag in the back of his car. The police officer literally asked, "What do you have in the trash bag?" And he said, "Garbage," and just let him drive the fuck away to murder more people and eat them.
Who would believe that is garbage?
Like, what the fuck? Like, who
the fuck hauls garbage in their backseat?
Right? It's so bonkers. One of Dahmer's victims escaped, ran to the police the police didn't believe him, took him back to Dahmer, where Dahmer killed him.
Yeah, I saw the Netflix series on it.
That's nuts.
It's crazy.
And it's if you look, if you start like digging into the realm of serial killers and the absolute just fumbling of investigations, it makes you wonder. Makes you wonder, like, maybe they're letting some stuff slip. Like, fucking Green River Killer, Gary Ridgway, probably the most prolific serial killer the United States has ever known. Killed like 50 women, right? Between in the early 80s to the late 90s. He would dump them along the Green River on the West Coast. They would set up traps for him because he would go back and revisit the sites. This motherfucker, they had cops staked out where a body was found. They were watching because they knew he would come back. The cops just happened to go get some coffee at the exact time Ridgway would go back and visit the body.
Of course they did.
What the fuck?
Which is on par for like Manson. Should have went to prison several times for all the felonies, and his parole officer was like, no, he's good. Mm-hmm. He's good. He's doing great. Remember they raided the ranch and found stolen cars and guns and all types of shit. No, he's good. He's good. And then what's even crazier now that I think about this, because I'm definitely 100% like a true crime noob. And still to this day, I mean, outside of like Dahmer and them, Manson's still one of the more famous stories that group.
100%.
Right? And to me, that's kind of crazy. Like some of these other guys should be front page in you know, with Manson, but Manson's still one of the first ones that people could tell you about because he was so overly publicized.
Definitely one of the most prolific.
Yeah.
Criminals.
And you almost wonder if that's part of the plan too. Like, he was the poster child. He was the major bad guy, and they let all these other fucking cronies just run.
It's weird.
It does seem, because, you know, and this is coming from two guys that we're smart enough, but we sure as fuck ain't geniuses. And the fact that they had police force after police force after police force involved in some of these situations, and motherfuckers just constantly drop the ball like that is crazy.
Dude, it keeps going. It keeps going. Look at Ted Bundy. Ted Bundy escaped custody, not once, but twice. He escaped from a courthouse at one of his hearings, took off, fucking went and murdered more people.
Because that happens.
Got arrested, got put into jail in Colorado, where he escaped. Disappeared, resurfaced in Florida, murdering more people. Like, seriously?
I mean, now it really does have me asking questions, man. I mean, my mind is fucked. I did not expect this type of conclusion from this story. Like I said, it wasn't the angle I was going for at all.
You get into that precursor of the satanic panic rabbit hole, and there is some fuckery going on.
Which, I mean, the description alone is fucking crazy. The satanic panic.
Yeah, there was a hard push for a narrative there. Real hard from the government up and ups. And there were a lot of victims in the wake of that narrative.
It's fucking crazy to me. Absolutely crazy.
It's terrifying.
And I'm not going to get over the fact that the old boy said he did a satanic ritual at an Air Force base.
Yeah, I wonder what the Air Force base is in Minot. Let's look. Let's Google.
And what's even, you know, it makes sense because, like, if I run that in my brain against the Collins Elite, they had the demonic angle as well, but from a UFO standpoint, and who deals with UFOs more than anybody is the goddamn Air Force.
Yes. Why does that sound familiar to me? The Minot Air Force Base, established in 1957 in North Dakota, critical strategic asset hosting two legs of the nuclear triad, the fifth bomb wing of B-52H bombers and the 91st missile wing, the Minutemen 3 ICBMs. Is there a tie to some weird shit with Minot? Why does that sound so familiar to me?
I wonder if I just it does sound familiar. I wonder if I covered it in one of my recent episodes about like during the Cold War.
Yeah.
UFOs coming in and shutting nukes off.
I bet it is.
I think I did. Minot, now that you say that.
Base. Yeah, I'm saying Minot, but people are going to rip me open for not saying Minot. But Minot Air Force Base UFO case, October 24th, 1968. UFO appeared at a close distance to 1 mile at a high rate of speed, pacing aircraft for nearly 20 miles before disappearing on the radar scope. I guarantee it is.
Oh, yeah. And that I wonder if that was the one that ends up coming back during the night.
U.S. Air Force Captain David Schindel testified he saw 10 nuclear missiles go off at the same time as airmen reported a giant UFO hovering over Minot Air Force Base in 1966.
Yep. We just recently covered that. That's fucked up. Especially like me saying right before that, the Collins Elite dealing with the demonic side and the UFO side and who deals with the most, the Air Force Base and blah, 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 blah.
That's fucking weird, bro.
That's crazy.
Berkowitz saying he was doing satanic rituals in Minot Air Force Base, and it's also linked to UFO. We're already off the rabbit holes.
This is awesome.
Bro, think about the rituals they're doing in like around CERN and shit.
Yeah. No doubt. No fucking doubt. That's fucking crazy.
Fucking weird. Because I got to looking at it. I'm like, the Minutemen missiles. Like, we talked about this lately.
Yeah. We did. 100%
in your nuke UFO.
Yeah. That's fucking crazy. I did not expect that at all. That's rad. Terrifying, but it's rad.
Now it makes you. Now it makes you wonder. The fucking connection between demonic occult forces and goddamn UFOs now.
I know. It's two things that I love to keep separated, but holy shit. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Now I want to know more.
We went off the rails.
Yeah. Yeah, because when I was looking at the occult angle, in this Manson stuff, it's specifically like some of the narratives I was reading specifically made me think of the Collins Elite. It just drew my attention on the Collins Elite. Cause I remember them monitoring. I think that's where my thought process was going, as I know the CIA has monitored these types of situations just like the Collins Elite did. Cause I can remember they were watching people using fucking black magic because they thought, they were convinced that they were summoning these UFOs, which were demonic forces, and that's why they were keeping an eye on them. And they had, I remember in our episode, they had specific individuals they were watching. They named them.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy. Dude. Crazy.
How?
Serial killers and UFOs.
Yeah.
The fuck?
You've got another prolific serial killer of the 70s claimed to have taken part in a demonic ritual in the 60s in the Minot Air Force Base.
Yeah. That was 100% visited by UFOs.
That was later on visited by UFOs.
And the fact that it was later on is even crazier.
And like the point you made, like how I get it that people within the jail system talk about stuff.
Sure.
But what are the odds of Berkowitz learning about Perry's ritualistic murder just through the grapevine? Probably not that good unless he's talking to motherfuckers that are into ritualistic murders.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really does. At some point, you have to make the assumption there's a network. You have to.
Sucks.
Those things just don't happen.
And it's multiple different serial killers claiming these networks happen, and they're not even necessarily connected to one another. Because you had Berkowitz going off, firing off that, hey, there is a band of roving serial killers that we're part of, that we are killing people. And then you have a guy like Dean Corll, who has not any connection to Berkowitz that I know of, but at this point there probably is, who was also like, yeah, there is. We're just a whole band of fucking murdering chaos out here, just, you know, going town to town, picking people off and shit. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, and the fact that that's even kind of crazier, the fact that you worded it the way you just did, 100% makes me think of some type of government, like, disruption program.
And the fact that so many of the most prolific serial killers in the United States just happen to have incompetent police forces that fumble the ball over and over and over,
yeah,
and over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah. Because what are the odds that, like, in the same time frame, there were all these, like, I don't want to oversell them, but they were very famous serial killers that all just kind of so happened to also have their own territory, so to speak. You know what I'm like? It would make more sense to me if we were all in a fucking AA meeting and we're like, hey, let's just go out and create chaos.
Dude,
you know, but they stick together. They hit cities together. But the fact that, like, the idea that these guys would be like, let's separate and go to the corners of the states and just have our own, like, that just sounds fucking crazy to me.
And if you watch, there's an interview with Ted Bundy 12 hours before he's executed. And it is the coldest shit ever, because you watch that man speak. He's still thinking he's going to get out of it. He's still thinking it. I guarantee you that up until the point that his heart stopped beating, he was still in the mindset that he was going to get out of this. Cause that interview is just cold. And like, he's trying to push a narrative of like, well, this is why I did this. This is why I did that. But in his, like, you watch him speak, that's not a man that's afraid to die. That's a man who's thinking he's still going to get the fuck out of this. Which makes you wonder if there wasn't somebody in his head, in his ear, saying, hey,
we got you
in this narrative and we'll get you out of here.
We got you.
Get you out of here, Teddy boy.
That is a good fucking point. That's a good point.
It's weird.
Beyond like extreme delusion or like just extreme overconfidence, it would suggest that at the bare minimum, it suggests that somebody has previously gotten him out of trouble. And he, like you said, he's sitting there on his deathbed just waiting for the phone call, waiting for the guys to come through again.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fucking crazy.
And you hear Manchurian candidates and you think of like people just snapping or like super soldiers going out and committing all these. I never really put together that a Manchurian candidate could very well have been a serial killer.
Yeah.
Which entices the same amount of fear, but also a different kind of fear, especially at the time period when it was going on, which was leading right in to the satanic panic, which is almost like it was like a fear thresher. Like they were trying to get as much of it out of people as you can, because you had the Cold War going on, everybody waiting to get nuked out of their fucking brains. And then you had serial killer after serial killer after serial killer running around, just terrorizing cities. It was like a whole fucking thing.
It is crazy.
And then you got fucking UFOs running around. I don't know what the fuck they're doing. They're trying to keep people from nuking themselves again.
This is fucking nuts, dude.
I don't know.
This is not where I expected this episode to end.
No.
At all.
I don't know.
That's fucking wild, bro. I love it, though.
Yeah.
I love it. See, every once in a while we stumble on some good shit.
Some weird shit.
It's definitely weird. It's definitely connections that I did not anticipate being made. and thoughts, forcing me to have thoughts that I didn't think that I would ever have.
Think about the fact that there may have been a network between serial murderers and the U.S. prison system that was sharing details of all the ritualistic murders that are going on while they're in the pen.
What's even crazier, like when you made that comment that people were snatching people up for specific killers and specific reasons. Like that sounds ritualistic.
It's
in nature.
It's crazy.
That's fucking nuts. Because it, I don't know, man. Now I'm just going to be convinced that motherfuckers back then, serial killers were being possessed by aliens. Demon aliens.
Fuck.
Aliens or demons. And or demons.
Because, I mean, snatching people up is kind of an alien thing.
True.
Damn.
We're fucking geniuses.
I don't know what we solved, but it is
something. Everything.
Serial killer, ritualistic, demonic alien murders.
And we know currently that it is possible to summon UFOs because the CE5 movement does it.
And that's weird that you bring that up because that's the thing that I'm digging into for the next
good episode. Good.
Not necessarily serial killers, but definitely some CE5 stuff.
It's crazy.
That is weird. Literally, I started out with the definition of CE5.
Interesting. We're on to something.
Quit spying on my episode.
We're on to something. The weird verse is acknowledging our existence again.
So fucking weird. Fuck yeah. There you have it. There you have it, Holocult. We just solved all serial murders from 1959 to 1999.
Yeah, we're aliens. We're a big aliens. Deal.
Prove us wrong.
We're a big deal.
The burden of proof is on you. Prove us wrong.
Steve does have a really good point.
Oh. Yeah, that went in a weird direction.
It's cool. Way cooler than I thought it would be. I love those.
Demonic rituals on Minot Air Force Base with serial killers that later leads to UFOs.
That's fucking crazy.
Or was the UFO? I wonder if the UFOs were there first. Would that change the dynamic if the UFOs were there first?
It could. It's still gross.
Yeah. Did this say when he took part in
the ritual?
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't specifically say, but that is right. That is right in the time of Manson and before Berkowitz started his murdering, the murders that we know of anyway.
Right.
Before the talking dog told him to do the murdering.
So he's saying he did the ritual before his murders?
Yes.
I mean, it's fucking kind of weird.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird.
Yep. And then toward the end, as most things do happen, Berkowitz starts redacting his story.
Of course.
Once like Netflix gets a hold of shit and stuff, he's like, no. The roving serial killer cult, satanic serial killer cult. I just made that all up. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. You along with other serial killers too.
Yeah. Weird.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Weird.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
It's crazy.
We fucking rule.
It's crazy that we are technically crime solvers.
I expect a recommendation from our government any day now.
I'm sure they're recommending something, but it probably
The Medal of Awesome.
Oh, damn, this is a long one. All right, Hollow Cult. There you have it. There you have it. I don't know what you have, but
it's yours.
Demonic, ritualistic, serial killing, cult, UFOs.
It's awesome.
Not how you thought this episode was going to end, did you? Mm-mm. Same. But on that note, thanks for hanging out with us. Check us out on all our social medias. And until we meet again, stay safe, stay weird. And I told all you fuckers not to be trusting aliens. Nobody listened. Nobody listened. In the meantime, you got serial killer Berkowitz doing demonic rituals in Air Force bases that summoned UFOs.